I'm from California Lutheran College, and I teach curriculum and research in the graduate department in the early childhood division. I'm here at Holden doing things for teachers and parents and anyone who has an interest in children, because most of my illustrations will be those of children. Today, the topic is values and spiritual growth. What are some of the things a child inherently values? First of all, he values himself. This is what is known as ego strength, which develops with self-understanding and a feeling of self-worth determined by opinions others reflect around him. It develops when he can trust those about him, feeling comfortable and safe from the time he is born, having confidence in love from parents and those outside the family. Ego strength grows when he is permitted to learn gradually and the adults around him have an understanding of his capacity and his readiness. It grows when adults prepare him for new experiences and reality is given in small doses so that his adaptive capacity can expand. In this way, he can learn to cope with negative circumstances, like a tonsillectomy, going to the hospital, to the dentist, and that sort of thing. A young child values the feeling of togetherness, of belonging and having a part in family plans, of knowing that his place and his contribution count. He values laughter that is spontaneous and gay, that recognizes the droll, that turns an awkward, frustrating moment into a thing of no importance, that warms and reassures and spells good fellowship. He values being enjoyed and being listened to. I had a little four-year-old whose mother came to me after a Thanksgiving celebration, and she said that she asked Ruthie when everybody had gone, Ruthie was four, just who she really enjoyed the most of all the relatives that were there. And she said, I really liked Uncle John. And her mother was very surprised because Uncle John, as far as she could see, hadn't said much of anything during the whole celebration. And she says, well, why do you say that? Well, she said, I had this rock, and I brought it to Uncle John, and he put it in his hand, and he looked at it and looked at it, and then he said, So Uncle John knew how to listen. A child values learning. He has an abundance of that peculiar joy of the mind called curiosity. He wants to know more. He embraces new experiences that he can understand, but he would proceed at his own pace. Only the wise, caring adult will recognize what that pace is and further the skill or insight that is needed. The children had gathered the first day of school, and many of the mothers were still hanging around, and I noticed little Larry kept following me. And finally I said, Larry, is there something I could help you with? And Larry said, I'd just like to know how soon we're going to start learning something. We had been in session all of 15, 20 minutes. The young child also values recognition of his growth, his wonderful becoming. How often we hear them say, now I can do it all by myself. And we adults need to develop many different ways of saying, good for you, great, I like that, you did it all yourself. And there was an article in one of the educational journals that written by an educator in Hawaii. And the article was called 65 Ways of Saying Good For You. All the different phrases a person can use. Like we're apt to use the same old phrase over and over again. Pretty soon it doesn't mean much. Then our children value the festive moment, the greatest factor in building family solidarity. Let's celebrate. It's something our family always had the habit of doing. We'd celebrate, the day that one of the girls became a scout or a brownie, or the day that the report cards came in. And it didn't make any difference what the grades were. The fact that this was report card day, we'd celebrate. And the way we'd celebrate would be maybe having a special dessert or going out to eat at a favorite place, just doing something a little different that night. And I noticed that our daughters in their own homes now do that. Todd had been having some difficulty getting a perfect paper in math, and that particular test had to be perfect, and it had to be done in a certain length of time. And he was getting pretty discouraged, but finally, he got a perfect paper, so they decided they were going to celebrate. And when they went out to this eating place, who should walk in but his second grade teacher? And she thought that was really great. And the next time he got a perfect paper, she wrote a little note at the bottom, "Are we going to eat it so-and-so tonight?" The next thing of value I'll mention is something that's very precious to each of us, and that's time of our own. Each child needs the time and opportunity to look and feel, to marvel and dream, to have a choice of activity at home or at school. Time to watch the clouds, or possibly an ant carrying a load bigger than himself. He needs time to get in touch with his inner feelings and to wonder. One time in our nursery school, two of the little boys were sitting on a bench, just not doing anything, just looking. And of course, I thought maybe they should, they might be bored. So I was suggesting things that they could do. And then one of the little boys said, "Well, no, Mrs. Edmund, we just want to sit here and look a while." They wanted a moment free of any pressure. They just wanted to sit and relax and watch. And it's wonderful when children will tell you what they need. We had a mother here last week who had triplets, and they were all 3 years old. Each one as different as can be, a boy and two girls. And when I told her this story, she said that one of her little girls has let her know from the time practically that she was born that she wanted to be by herself. And she said after she started to talk, she would come to her mother and say, "Mother, I would like to be alone now." And so then they'd find some little corner where she could go with a book or string some beads or something, all by herself. And she said, by the same token, they understand that she needs time alone. And so whenever she says, "I need to be alone now, will you please just be quiet and leave me by myself because I need time to myself." And she said, they understand that because they need time alone themselves and realize what it is. And the first week or two of school in the fall, I used to have a little teepee set up in one corner of our school with some beads and little things that could be played with for that very purpose. If any child really wanted to get away from the hubbub in the school, he could crawl in that teepee and sit there and do his thing, whatever it was. But you'd be amazed at how often children need that. And I think we need to watch for and appreciate the child who does need to be alone maybe more than another child. I know my daughter has twins. They're 11 now, but they are so different. One of them is the kind who could spend hours by herself and be perfectly happy. The other one likes to be with people. She needs a friend. She always has to either be at a friend's house or have a friend over to her house because it's a special need that she has. And just as her sister needs that to be all by herself, completely by herself. We also must take time for the serene moment as our environment and lives become more complex. We all need time for quiet thought, the enlargement of that self to which our children look with trust and expectation, that the values held dear by them will be truly realized. Our children need help in understanding their peers so that they can function happily and effectively with their playmates and schoolmates and brothers and sisters. Often a child comes in and say, they didn't listen. They left the play. And I remember one little boy, I was teaching kindergarten down in Oklahoma City, and he had a stepbrother that was eight years old, and he was five. And he came to me one day and said, what can I do with him? He beats me up all the time. He's a big eight-year-old, and I'm just five. And I said, well, you know that you can't beat him up, so just forget trying to get even. So why don't you really try to learn to like your brother, even if he is kind of naughty sometimes? I know it's hard, so maybe if you pray a little bit about it, ask God to help you love him, even though he is naughty to you. And it was cute. A couple of months later, little David, that was his name, asked if he could do the prayer. I always let the children do the praying as long as they wanted to. Every once in a while they would say, well, now, Mrs. Edmund, we'd like you to pray today. But this day, David wanted to pray. So he said, I figured he had something important on his mind because he didn't often volunteer. In fact, one time when we were going to say grace, he said, my dad won't let me say grace. He just says, shut up and eat. So when I tell you how he prayed, it'll mean a little more knowing he had that background. And he said, dear Lord, please help me love my brother, even when he be's naughty to me. And I thought, gee whiz, that's a great prayer. Maybe our countries could learn to say that prayer. Help us love our brothers even when they be naughty to us. How can we as parents and teachers of young children help lay this foundation, a foundation of acceptance of differences? It seems that those who have a deep faith in God and a sincere religious conviction have the greatest way in the world to help children understand, because they learn from the very beginning that God created us all. All people are precious in the sight of God. With our children, we must emphasize the delight of differences, how differences make us more interesting people. I have a little song that emphasizes this concept. What if all flowers were small and blue? What if the birds sang the same song too? What if your friends looked just like you? What a dull world this would be. I'm glad that the flowers are different each one. I'm glad that the birds sing their own little song. If we don't look alike, I know that's not wrong. It's fun to be different, you see. And then following that song, we play a little game where they look at each other and find out all the different ways, the ways in which they are different from the person sitting next to them. Well, I have blue eyes and you have brown eyes, or I have black shoes, you have red shoes, and emphasizing the fact that we don't have to match everybody. We don't have to conform. Being ourselves is good. It just makes the world a little more interesting. Breckinridge and E.L. Vincent list the widening of social horizons as one of the basic needs of children for growth in moral values. Along with this, they emphasize the importance of good physical health. Healthy kids are more likely to have courage to stand on their own two feet and to resist temptation. They are more likely to be free of bitterness and desire for revenge that get kids into trouble. Another thing needed for moral growth, of course, is emotional security. Children who are loved and wanted don't feel isolated and bitter against society. Children who know, first of all, that God loves them, even when they are naughty, and that their parents, too, love them unconditionally. I had a little boy who used to come to school on Monday mornings with his fists clenched, and he was just ready to flay out at anybody who got in his way. And I knew that there must be problems at home, so I talked to the parents and found out they had a new house and a newly seeded lawn and new furniture, and the child was so consumed from all sides with don'ts that he was just tied up in knots himself. And he'd come to school and he had to get rid of his frustrations. So I talked with the parents and asked them about the conditions at home. And I said, does Mark have any choices? Do you give him, can he make up his mind about things that aren't too important, like what am I going to wear to school today? I said, can he pick out his own clothes? And no, they wouldn't let him do that. I said, well, do you play with Mark? Well, I'm so busy building cupboards and all these things that I just haven't had a chance to play with him much, but I let him come down and watch me. And I said, well, you know, they... And then the father said, you know, Mark is all we've got, and we really want to do a good job with him. When he leaves home in the morning, I tell him, Mark, now be a good boy. And I said, do me a favor. Next time he leaves home for school, say, Mark, have fun today. And do that every morning. Tell him to have fun. Because I said, he needs to relax and enjoy life, and so do you. And they were intelligent parents, and they took my advice, and we could see the change in Mark so rapidly, it was almost unbelievable. And he just lived a little ways from our pastor, who also had a boy the same age in my nursery school. And he said, say, what did you say to Mark's parents? That he's just a different child. We used to just, when we saw him coming, we almost felt like locking the doors because it was he had such a way about him when he came in. He was just mad at everybody. And he would always start fighting. But now he's a joy to have around. And I said, well, all I said was just, enjoy Mark while you have him, while he's little. If you cut off communications now, you can't expect to do anything about getting those channels of communication open by the time he's a teenager. And don't expect so much of him. Enjoy him and help him enjoy being around you. And that's all it took. But parents, in their eagerness to be perfect parents, so often goof it up. Busy children, too, who are helped to express their feelings for adventure and excitement in wholesome ways are not driven to be bad because of boredom. Self-control, of course, is high on the list of basic things children need for strong moral growth. The child who knows how to pray and ask for God's help will gain inner strength, not known to the child who has not been taught about spiritual strength. As a child builds self-control, he becomes able to discipline these impulses. He finds that immediate gratification is not always the most satisfying reward. Some things are worth waiting for. It takes some added maturity, of course, for this. Then, of course, the child needs the inspiration to desire what's right. If he understands God's love for him, he will be motivated to please God by doing God's will. In fact, the entire basis for moral values is the love of God, as it is reflected through the love of parents, teachers, and anyone who is genuinely interested in it. Children need models, and I'm sure you've all heard this saying that if a child lives with criticism, he learns to condemn. If a child lives with hostility, he learns to fight. If a child lives with ridicule, he learns to be shy. If a child lives with jealousy, he learns to feel guilty. If a child lives with tolerance, he learns to be patient. If a child lives with encouragement, he learns confidence. If a child lives with praise, he learns to appreciate. If he lives with fairness, he learns justice. If he lives with security, he learns to have faith. If he lives with approval, he learns to like himself. If he lives with the acceptance and friendship, he learns to find love in the world. And I think each one of us might be able to add others to that. For instance, if a child lives with affluence, he learns to waste. Or if he lives with people to whom material things are most important, then the value of people are lessened. Can you think of any other things that might be a parallel of this?
Would it be hatred to certain races?
Yes. Prejudice.
Uh-huh. Prejudice.
Naturally, if he lives with prejudice, mm-hmm. he will learn to dislike people who aren't like him,
right.
for instance, or certain ethnic groups. Parents who respect each other, trust each other with thoughtfulness and courtesy, are setting a parent pattern for their children every moment they are with them. Courtesy becomes a habit. Anytime we say something to anyone that makes them think less of themselves, we are helping to destroy something fine within them. Before a person can think well of others, he needs to think well of himself. Brandon once said, "There's no value judgment more important to man, no factor more decisive to his psychological development and motivation than the estimate he passes on himself." Our self-concept determines who we are, who we think we are, what we think we are, what we do, and what we can become. Your child's judgment of himself influences the kinds of friends he chooses, for instance. Older siblings, as well as parents, are also models for children's behavior. Later on, when they extend themselves into the neighborhood and community, they find people whom they admire and emulate. Character, according to the Union College research definition, must include purposiveness, a life goal toward which the individual is striving. For a child to develop his potential, he needs to acquire special vision, a dominating purpose in the service of mankind. The uniqueness of the child plays a vital role. It is important to help him find his own special contribution to the world. This is the essence of positive mental health. Many children are forced into thinking they have to be athletes because their dad was a big football player. Some children are deprecated because they enjoy music and would like to play the violins, boys especially. Sometimes just well, the sexism, of course, enters in here. Parents have the idea that girls must do this and boys must do that, rather than allowing the child to be what he wants to be. And really, mental health depends a great deal upon a person being able to follow his own inclinations, because everybody is different. An attitude which this research indicates is best started at nursery level, and that's the desire to be happy so that you infect others with your happiness. Feeling good about oneself, of course, is basic to say to anyone's happiness. How many adults do you meet each day who infect you with their happiness? The foundations for a child's growing attitude that he is part of a universe are laid very early, when he realizes that the universe is basically friendly. Man has been given the freedom of choice to use the forces of the universe for good or evil. Research has shown that even a nursery child begins to learn that when he is a co-worker with the universe, helping to release the power of good in the world, the universe is friendly. This is a time to help him develop an attitude to conserve and not to waste the resources of this world, to work toward improving the environment. Just a little thing like picking up the litter and discouraging others from throwing it is a good beginning. Each child needs a clear idea of what is right and what is wrong, and an interest in doing acceptable things. Child needs the assurance that adults will carry part of the responsibility for his behavior. Given a freedom beyond his capacity to govern himself, he can become very frightened. I know Todd was just insistent. He's 9 now, but I think he's about 8 at the time. He was just insistent he was going to ride this ride at Disneyland, some kind of roller coaster, Magic Mountain or something. Is that Magic Mountain?
You end up in the water.
Right. Well, do you? Whew. Well, anyway, his mother didn't think he was really big enough to do it, but he insisted. And since she likes to ride roller coasters, she says, okay. So she's setting him in her lap. And she said she didn't realize until she felt his cheeks, and they were just wet with tears, that he had been screaming and crying the whole time. And then when he finally got off the roller coaster, he said, they shouldn't let little kids like me ride on something like that. So you see, he expected adults to be responsible for the things that he was allowed to do. He wanted to do it. But
we did the same thing. We sent the kids through the Disneyland show of Snow White and the Four
Seven Dwarfs.
They got so scared of that witch that comes.
Yeah. An environment that defines wise limits promotes real freedom. As a child develops the capacity to handle his own impulses, he's given more freedom, and greater demands are then placed upon him by those around him. A child needs consistent limits as he struggles to find a pattern for certain fundamental urges. As he finds gratifying channels of expression for his impulses, he becomes psychologically healthier, freer of anxiety, with more emotional energy. As adults, we need to be resourceful in finding positive ways to satisfy our children's need for attention, challenge, productiveness, and communication. We hope to see each child become so totally involved in living and learning, he will develop a habit of finding joy in doing things for others. As parents and teachers of young children, we have all had deeply moving experiences of kindnesses expressed by our children. Spontaneous helpfulness, generosity, willingness to please, and at the same time, willingness to forgo his own pleasure. And these are all evidences of their basic goodness. And I noticed this especially when I would make a mistake and say, uh-oh, I goofed. That's okay, Mrs. Edmund, that's okay. And so quite often I would goof purposely so that they would know it was all right to goof, and they wouldn't have to try to slip out of it or anything, that it's human to err. And then they become so much more forgiving. We are all interested in the origins of positive values. Some are caught and some are taught. Values are caught from the environment, whether it be positive or negative. We can control our children's environment only to a certain extent. We can monitor the TV programs and watch and place definite boundaries here. We can keep them out of the movie houses. The main movie may be okay, but the ads for coming attractions may be very definite negative influences, as are the ads on TV. What can we do about TV ads? Do we have any recourse?
We always make fun of them. We just tear them apart and make fun of them and just laugh at them because they're so stupid.
Yeah, that's good. That's one way to teach a child taste, I guess. And I think we should write to the sponsors if they become too repulsive. I think that probably would do more good than anything. We can expose him to a positive religious environment, a positive nursery school environment, a positive home environment, in hopes that the inner resources that will ultimately make him the determiner of his own values will outweigh the negative influences he is bound to encounter. Does anyone have anything to add to this? This ends my presentation, but I thought you might have some thoughts about your own experiences with children and some of the values you have tried to impress upon your own children, and how did you go about doing it?
Doris, in high school, in health class, I remember when we got to talking about the minority groups, I always played the record, you have to be carefully taught, from South Pacific.
Oh, yes.
And it was really good, because then I think the girls stopped and really thought back and realized that all of their prejudices actually had come from parents or grandparents.
Sure.
Or somebody else. It's like the first time that Katie saw a Negro. Mm-hmm. Didn't mean a thing to her.
No.
Because somebody was a little darker than she was.
Uh-huh. That's right. They are taught those prejudices. They certainly aren't born with them.
No, not at all.
I didn't experience this, but I heard one young mother, what she did, her little girl's first doll was a Negro doll, a black doll. And she took her little daughter, she was precocious really, she took her to the gas station to get gas one day, and the way we were waited upon by a black man. And the little girl said, if he's black, mommy, what are we? And her mother says, we're beige.
Cute.
And I thought that was marvelous, because it isn't nearly as much of a stigma for the black man is to say we're white.
Yeah.
We're not white.
Yeah.
Says we're beige.
Yeah.
And the little girl took the little black doll up, and the black man said to his partner, well, I guess we're getting somewhere.
Is that right? That's encouraging. Well, I watched, it was 15 years ago probably when this happened. That was before the age of black is beautiful. I really think that has done a lot. Just the phrase black is beautiful. This this little black boy were playing a game. And I came along and I said, well, how are you boys doing?
Well, the little black boy said, I don't know. He says I'm black and my mother says I'm brown. And Mark says, oh, well, don't pay any attention to me. I don't know my colors too good. I'll get black and brown mixed up. So he just took care of that very nicely, I thought.
Yes. You can have similar problems if you have in your community midgets or dwarf people, or persons without limbs, or persons that don't hear, or persons that can't see. And the children obviously see that there's something different about them, and you have to, why is he like that, mommy? Why is he like that? And I have found that it's an easy answer to say, God made them that way, and they're special that way. And you just believe it. I have no idea what people, recently there's been a dwarf lady that's been in our town, and she seems to be wherever we are. And my kids just marvel at her size, and they just outright stare.
Uh-huh.
Well, first of all, you have to handle the staring problem, and secondly, you have to deal with the embarrassment that you feel, and you have no idea how they feel about your kids standing there staring.
Uh-huh.
And just,
right.
God made them that way. That's the way they are. And,
so that has to be good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay.